Well, we will continue with the last 3 weeks. And what we're on is eternal by emotion. And it's more awareness of your eternalness through emotions. And since we only got 3 lines last week, I guess we can go back and start from the very beginning. Eternal by emotion is not discontenting yourself. Your unenduring emotions, hardwired in your brain, keep you from living and expressing yourself as an eternal being. Live your emotions that are hardwired in your brain, and preventing yourself from being aware of your eternal self. That doesn't mean that living as an eternal being indicates you must live an unemotional self and life. It actually reveals that not discontenting yourself is an enduring, all-inclusive emotion that simultaneously expresses and satisfies and protects you at all times. Anybody want to comment on that or deal with that?
Got a question or two. First off, one of the last things that you said there protects you. In what sense is it offering protection?
Well, your regular emotions of fear, doubt, and uncertainty is your quick response or reaction to things. So your regular emotions protect your body in that way. Without discontenting yourself, your awareness of your environment expands and is more acute, simply because you're not discontenting yourself, and therefore by taking that discontent or the struggle of emotions away, you can be aware of your surroundings more accurately and completely.
Okay. Now, the variously over time, you've described and agreed that the condition of living absent discontenting myself will in and of itself be an emotion. Is that correct?
Well, emotion, yes and no. It's kind of like what Christianity promises you is the emotion or feeling of bliss. It is, all right, let me back up even before that. What you don't realize is that all of your emotions, good, bad, or indifferent, that you induce, are induced simply because you're trying to cover up, one way or another, a level of discontent that you've been living with from the get-go, without realizing it. So actually, all of your emotions, good, bad, and different, anger, fear, joy, happiness, pleasure, are either a response to your discontent or an attempt to cover up your discontent. You are unaware of, to a great extent, realizing or feeling what it would be like not having that underlying level of discontent in your body and life. And that, in a sense, is what we're talking about here. It's like being finally released or freed from an anguish or an angst. And that's the emotion.
Oh, okay. Then it seems to me that I certainly have become addicted to emotion.
Yep, and we'll even discuss why that is here in just a little while, but go ahead.
Okay, so then what do you suggest that the desire to overcome the sense of discontent, and I'm going to chase after one or other and induce one of the regular emotions, and that it seems like it's almost as natural as breathing. How do we interrupt that process? Is it I'm thinking it's everything I've been able to see, it's catching myself as quickly as I can, reacting and inducing an emotion, and realize that's what I'm doing and telling myself I don't want to do that anymore. Is there anything more that we can do?
I'll skip ahead several passages and start that particular part, and you can interrupt this anywhere along the line, okay?
Yeah, okay.
It is frequently declared that you want peace and harmony, yet you also want drama, especially the drama of conflict. Actually, you want feelings and emotions, for feelings and emotions indicate you are alive. Peace and harmony does not give you a sense of being alive. And above all things, existence is not enough. No matter the consequences, you want to exist and feel alive. Does that make sense?
Yes.
In other words,
are you saying, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, then I'm not regularly in the line. Are you saying that emotions are to prove that we are alive?
Yes. You'll do anything. Okay. Just existing, like in Buddhism as being consciousness, or Christianity, being one with God, existence is not enough for you. You want to be able to feel and know your existence in all ways. And so therefore, while on the one hand, we might say you want peace and harmony, well, peace and harmony, like bliss that's promised by Christianity, is, in a sense, in your mind, existence without feeling alive. You don't want existence without feeling alive. You don't want eternal existence. You want eternally feeling alive, and you want it now, and so you'll take any emotion that you can get, any way you can get it, just so you can feel alive. Is that okay? Damn the consequences. Full emotion ahead.
Yes, that's okay. I can agree to that, yes.
That's right.
I think I do that. Yeah, I do that, I think. Yeah.
And then you struggle against the emotion that you have induced or created to feel alive, and then your whole life in that regard is taken up with, on the one hand, creating the drama or emotion or feeling that you want, and the other hand is overcoming that feeling, trying to create another feeling that you would rather have. And all of that then essentially uses up your life.
Mm-hmm.
Are you okay with that, Patrick?
Well, what I'm thinking of is that some people in my acquaintance over time stand out as, shall we say, drama queens or drama kings?
Yeah. Or
that the tendency to be pushing and shoving circumstances in order to get that drama is fairly intense with some people.
Yeah.
And yet others, it doesn't to be nearly as intense.
It doesn't matter how intense necessarily at this point. You do it, or I do it on one level, and Gina does it on another level, and you do it on another level. The level of intensity of the emotions doesn't really matter as long as you are able to feel yourself and feel alive. This is one of the things that destroy focus. People, when you focus on something else or some other person, and you lose your sense of self in that regard, then there is that concern that, let's call it, you don't feel your aliveness, so you change your focus and attention back to yourself just for a moment even, so you can feel or check on whether you're still alive.
Yeah.
So,
hello, are you still there? Okay, I can go back now. Thanks a lot.
And then, that's right. And so even when I'm talking or you're listening to somebody else, you're always, always, always interrupting yourself. So one of the practices is to have expansive focus. That was one of those 44 items of experiencing your eternal self. Because what you do is you use focusing as a narrowing down until you close out your awareness of self. And what we're talking about is expansive focusing, in which through all of the things around you, you can zero in on something, but not lose your sense of self, or not even lose the sense of self around you. Another, what you may try sometime, is astral travel. That's scary to a lot of people, in the sense that then in astral travel, there is a loss of sense of self. And in that, then, this is scary. People have sleep problems for the simple reason that sleep is considered a little death. But you know, you'd sleep better if you'd pay attention to your dreams, because now in your dreams, you are fully aware that you are dreaming, yet you are sleeping.
And then being aware of the dreams, I know I'm alive.
You know you're alive.
Mm-hmm.
And even a lot of people in their dreams choose dreams that, are fearful or unhappy or something like that, in order to maintain the drama of their being alive.
Mm-hmm.
You okay with that, Patrick?
Yeah, I think so. I can see my own pattern that if I don't have something that I'm actively doing, and I go into kind of a holding mode for a period of time, I'm almost certainly going to try to blow something up to get some excitement.
Right. And that's because the more intense the feeling, the more alive you feel. Whether that's adrenaline rush or whatever, that's another thing about not discontenting yourself versus emotions. All emotions, you know, in a sense, follow an adrenaline rush, and then you pay the penalty for that when the adrenaline rush dissipates. But in not discontenting yourself, you can have the emotion without the adrenaline, oh, I'm going to pay for this tomorrow sort of a thing.
So within the condition of not discontenting myself, all the emotions are still available to me, but they take on a different character.
You can do that if you decide, well, I want a certain emotion, like maybe you want to go to a concert, or you want to go to a dance, or you want to go on a moonlight cruise. You can do that, but you're not doing that as a cover-up of any discontent or as an alternative, and etc. And even those emotions are greater because you're already not discontenting yourself and feeling alive in the first place.
Okay, got that.
Peace and drama oppose each other. So these people who say you want peace and harmony, not really, you don't. You want the drama, but you don't want the downsides of the drama. And since a peace and a harmony and a peace and drama oppose each other, and they're mutually destructive of each other.
Yes, they would be.
Yet, the drama of not discontenting yourself is mutually supportive.
Did you say drama and not discontenting myself are mutually supportive?
Yes.
Oh.
Because like you said, you can have any emotion you want. And by not discontenting yourself, you're not opposing drama, or you're not opposing peace, in that there is no opposition because you are not discontenting yourself in the first place. So the drama and not discontenting yourself can be mutually supportive in what you're doing and in your life.
Yeah, I got that. Okay, understand the thing.
So you use drama, depending on what extent or what intensity, you use drama as opposition and conflict to induce feelings and emotions. And you want those feelings and emotions to declare and affirm that Pat is alive. You say, no, that's not true. But I'll say, yes, it is true. And the problem is that peace in your life is like a little death. And unfortunately, peace in your life, like a little death, there's always a concern that may get out of hand.
Yeah, we won't let that go that far.
Well, you never know. That's right, because even in peace for a very short period of time, you insert drama or conflict to prove you're still alive. Okay. Your level of discontent is the size of your ego. Is this okay? Does anybody want to talk about ego in any way?
Well, that's what I was going to ask. What are we calling ego in this sense? That in the past we've called it our identity. How are we defining ego today?
Your identity. What else have
we lose, Roger?
What?
We lost you for a moment.
Yeah.
You still there, Patrick?
Yep, but we lost you for about 5 seconds.
Okay, maybe you just didn't like my answer.
No, didn't hear it. Didn't come through.
You said ego is defined as this identity. And the fact is, if you really get into it, everybody calls it a false identity. And then you ask me, well, what do we call not discontenting yourself? And I said, ego.
There was something scrambled in the mix-up. I didn't ask you that. I asked you, how are we defining ego tonight?
As I said, it is defining as still your identity. Can I explain that?
Please.
Would you be willing to accept that your identity is your discontent?
Why does that not sound...
Your feelings and emotions are your identity. And your feelings and emotions are your ego. Is your discontent? And because of the discontent, the dramas you create to induce emotions, isn't that then your identity? Do you not create the drama and then identify yourself with the drama and with the emotions and with the reactions?
Is it sort of like I set up a straw man, slay the straw man, in creating conflict, and then see myself as the slayer of the straw man?
Well, I'm not so sure that you did this, but others have for the last 2,600 years since Buddha, and somewhere along the line, you've taken on that belief or understanding in one way or another, because your ego is a measure of your discontent. In fact, it is your discontent. If I talk about ego, what can you say? Have you ever seen one? Would you know one if you recognized it?
Actually, I think so. I immediately got an image of
jets and sky and pimples.
You got an image of what?
Some loud-ass big guy who's spreading himself all over his environment to make himself look big, and I can see that's broadcasting all his discontent.
But you see, what you did is you related the ego to discontent, and when you did that, rather than as a self, that you have to conquer. But when you relate it to discontent, you can all of a sudden, it makes sense. Ego is a measure of your discontent.
I like that.
And ego as a self, you see, what Buddha did, or the teachings after Buddha, is that ego was a false self, so you must get rid of yourself. No. Save yourself and get rid of your discontent. We okay with this?
Yeah.
Why in God's name would you? Because what you find out if you save yourself and get rid of your discontent, then your ego becomes yourself as your finest companion. And you don't want to have an existence without self. Existence without self is meaningless. And
correct.
It is nothing that you would truly desire.
I think that's absolutely correct. I would never give up myself.
Why that's right. That? No one really would. And in fact, is in the same way, they try to use yoga or meditation or religion as a way to get rid of yourself. And so you got peace and harmony while you're doing those things. But my biggest argument with a lot of people is, yeah, and as soon as you come back from a Vipassana weekend or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you're right back where you were because you didn't get rid of your discontent. You created some moment of harmony by covering up your discontent while you were off at your Vipassana. We okay?
Yeah.
What
yeah.
I'm trying to do is there a way for you to see these things and fully live a complete and involved life? Well, if you got to get rid of yourself and you got to meditate 4 hours a day, I think you can't live a whole lot of real active involvement with your life because you're spending your time either in meditation or struggling against yourself, your ego.
Makes sense.
That's right. So, fact is, 2 years ago, I did an article called Ego Was Your Best Friend. We didn't understand it then, but it says it was the same thing then, is don't discontent yourself. Your ego is a measure of your discontent. The point of all of
it.
What?
Hang on a sec. Maybe I'm using the language wrong inside my thinking here, but you're saying ego is a measure of my discontent.
Right. The bigger the ego, the more the discontent.
Say that again? There was a breakup?
The bigger the ego, the more the discontent. The bigger the discontent.
Okay. Now, if I live absent discontent, I stop discontenting myself, doesn't it follow then I get rid of my ego?
You do, but you don't get rid of yourself.
Okay.
Now you have a self without discontent. What they were doing, it was making it a self, and they're calling it a false self. So if you get rid of that self, it is not really a false self. But if you get rid of that self to where you are living as no self, then in that, there's no aliveness in that you truly desire.
No.
The issue is not that the self is the problem. The discontent is the problem.
Yes, well, okay.
You okay?
Yep. So when you say, as you did a few minutes ago, that my ego can be my greatest friend, in what sense? If I'm living absent and I'm not discontenting myself, in what sense is my ego my greatest friend?
Because your ego as a self becomes a self without discontent.
Okay.
You with me?
Yeah, I'm following now.
Ego then is discontent, but it's like a discontented self. Okay, get rid of your discontent, and now you have a self without discontent.
Okay, I follow now.
Okay. Your identity, that's the self. They're treating it as a false self. Your identity, yourself, and all you identify with is real. Actually, now here's an important issue. Actually, even your discontent, unfortunately, is real. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah.
See, we're not saying then that the discontent is false. Buddhism played that crap up all along. No, your discontent is real. And I can see that in the things that I see or might call ego. I know that as your discontent. Are you okay with that?
Uh-huh. And you're saying that's very real.
And that's very real. And more importantly, then, that your greatest struggles in life reveal your finest assets. Therefore, if you got rid of your false self or your discontent, struggled against that, you are actually struggling against the revelation of your finest assets.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so what you've done is, I've used the example, you've hosed down the crime scene and then call in the CSI to try and solve the problem. So you can use your discontent as a way of understanding your finest assets or someone else's finest assets. Or you can get rid of your discontent and let your assets shine. But we have a tendency.
They will. Would they not rather naturally be visible if I rid myself of discontent?
That's right, because you've covered up your assets with discontent. In other words, you created the drama to feel alive, and then you struggled against the drama and created discontent. Then the discontent has concealed your greatest assets, your finest assets. And then you struggle against that. Well, don't do that in that regard as a self. Save yourself and get rid of your discontent.
I like that.
Well, it really certainly gives you more to talk about than just saying ego. Oh, there's ego. No, that is a display of one's discontent. And you got something to talk about or to deal with right there. But what we say is, no, that's ego. Don't do that. Well, what the hell good has that done you? And could you not understand that somebody who is displaying, like you say, some rash, intense ego, egoic problem in that regard, you can deal with that person in understanding what they are discontenting about? You can't do it. Oh, that's your ego. Well, what the hell does that mean? What do you deal with? What do you talk about? What's going on?
Yeah, you're an asshole. Get rid of your ego.
Yes, get rid of your assholeism. But if you know their discontent or in that regard is about that, usually that they're not living the eternal self that they truly desire, and the form and nature of the discontent really shows you to their finest assets that they desire. That's what the discontent is all about. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we call that ego and self, and we lose all awareness when we do that. As a personal being, you normally live by temporary emotions, and you temporarily thrive or strive in that. In fact, the all-pervading motions and feelings hardwired in your brain, which are there to please and excite you and to protect you, also conceal and limit your awarefully living as an eternal being today. Do you think that if you were awarefully living yourself as an eternal being today, that you would seriously be discontenting yourself regardless of what you're doing? Or would that whatever you're doing be clear enough from an eternal perspective that it would not discontent you.
Yeah, I picked door two there, yes. It seems that everything that we've talked about, that would be very true.
Therefore, that would seem that your emotions are withholding more from you than you're gaining.
Yes.
Which seems foolish because you do almost anything to get your next emotional fix. Just like cocaine. Mm-hmm. And that means then that the life force of your words and actions are driven by the very emotions that withhold or block you from what you truly desire. Actually, you might understand this, you're made deaf and blind by your emotions.
Well, it seems like if we put it the analogy like a fix, like cocaine, that a cocaine addict looking for their next fix doesn't think very expansively. Maybe you could say they think creatively about how to get the next fix, but that's all they're thinking of.
That's all you're thinking about. Most people are only thinking about that in terms of their next emotional fix.
I was just thinking that's where it goes, and that's so even in, let's say, my business environment, rather than dealing with the issue on the table relative to the business environment, I'll be looking for an action that I think will result in the emotion that I'd like to have.
That's right. And you may judge something by the reaction of your client. Oh boy, Pat, that's a good idea. And the idea may actually be shittier than hell, but you got your emotional fix and you believe that it was a good idea.
That's right. And that's so simple, isn't it? That's the way it works.
That's right. And so, like, I talked to so many healers. Well, the patient went out of the room and they were so happy when they left. See, then then the healer got her next fix. I said, hey, whether the patient went out happy and pain-free is not an issue. How did you do? Did you do for the patient yourself at 110%? Well, they went out smiling. Isn't that right? No, that's not right. Because you trying to get the patient to smile is you're trying to get a fix from the patient. Understand that, Gina?
Certainly do.
Yeah, we all go through that. You know, I've had my clients and et cetera. And you can't trust, and you shouldn't trust, a client's reaction, no matter what it might be, as an emotional fix for you. And I don't mean you, Gina. I mean for us all.
Right.
So, the question is, would you rather live as a particular and personal eternal being with an identity, or would you rather destroy your identity and live for your next fix?
That's surely a rhetorical question.
Could you understand that not discontenting yourself enables you as a personal being to stand firm for or against something or someone with without limiting your living as you truly desire.
Can you repeat that, please? Because I think you read it.
I'm burping here. Can you understand that not discontenting yourself enables you as a personal being, Patrick, to stand firm or against something or someone without limiting your living as an eternal being?
So in a way, that's a very important gateway. Absent that gateway, it's
you see, impossible. Well, that's right. But what we've said up to now, that as an eternal being, you have to be eternally accepting, forgiving, joyful, peaceful, loving, compassionate, and all of that. Wait a minute. What then do you do in a situation that requires drastic action? You're put on a horns of a dilemma. But not discontenting yourself allows you as a personal being to stand for or against someone. You can stand against terrorism without discontenting yourself, and you are not limiting yourself as living as an eternal being. Is that understandable?
Yeah.
You don't have to accept terrorism. You don't have to be forgiving. You don't have to be loving to terrorists, etc., in order to try and be and live as an eternal being. The issue is only, can you do that without discontenting yourself? And the answer to that is, yes, you can. So you haven't set that shackle of always doing good, better, best, right things, loving.
Or turning the other cheek.
Or turning the other cheek. Or giving your coat away after the guy steals your shirt.
Yeah.
Is it possible, do you suppose, for you to be angry and forceful without being discontent?
I'm getting a grip of that now, I think.
So, when you judge me for the way I am, I may or may not be actually discontenting myself, no matter how forceful I may present something.
Yep.
And I can be forceful without discontenting myself. And I can even be what you would call angry without discontenting myself. Is this okay?
Yeah, so that in that circumstance, tell me why would you use anger?
Because you, as in most people, won't respond to pleasant happiness. Most people only respond to threats in one way or another. Do you understand that?
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's a technique more than anything else, right?
No, it is. You can say it's a technique, but let's say it. As long as you are not too unhappy until you are threatened by life, you won't take your life seriously.
Yeah,
do you understand?
Yeah, I do.
And
yeah.
As soon as starts aches and pains and problems and difficulties start occurring, in other words, you're threatened. Only then, when you're threatened, are you willing to do anything about changing your life or doing anything about what it is you're doing, no matter how discontenting that may be. We okay with that?
Yep.
Yes. Well, as an example, one of my headmasters just had a heart attack, and he is a drama king.
Sure. But it doesn't even have to get to that extreme. In other words, you can have cancer without realizing the drama that you are creating in yourself and life, and it then ends up as cancer. And then we say, oh, well, now it's a big threat. It was a threat all along for years and years and years, and you just ignored it. It had to be a big enough threat for somebody to do anything about it.
Yeah.
That's the purpose of the descriptionary, in that if you see an illness and you see you're doing something that portrayed in a certain way as a certain illness, then just keep doing it, and then it will take that picture or outcome in your life. What does it take? Wake up. Are you people living as eternal beings do not measure you by the good or bad of what you say or do, simply because good and bad are not about you. However, what discontents you is wholly about you. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because good and bad is measured by some other standard, and it's not necessarily about you. But what discontents you is only measured by your standard. So good and bad is a non-issue as far as all of this is concerned. But I know what it discontents you. I know more about you than good or bad beliefs. If you see others, and if you believe you know them by their words, their emotions, and actions, like somebody struggling with ego, etc. If you think you know them by that, you don't know them at all. Is that okay?
I think I understand that within the context of everything we've been saying, yes.
Well, let's see if you understand the next sentence. You don't know them at all, and you don't know yourself either.
Well, going back to what we talked about earlier, I think that's a correct statement, because, as you said, that I will have been tending to know myself by my emotions and my feelings. They're my identity.
That's right. But they are, you've made that. They are not really your identity. And it's certainly not the identity you truly desire. And in fact is, I can from that understand that most of your emotions are about that you are not living the identity that you truly desire.
I think that's correct, yes.
So that we can say, when you are not discontent, despite your words, emotions, and actions, nor the world around you, you are truly yourself. Is that okay?
Yep.
I have a lot more of this elsewhere, but let me bring up a point here that maybe this is a point for it, or time for it. Do you understand?
Are you still there?
I'm still here. Are you still there?
Yes. No, but I'm having trouble with the connection. Yeah.
Well, Simone, why the hell don't you pay your phone bill? Maybe the Swiss people are trying to tell you, pay your phone bill, or we'll turn it off completely.
Okay, I will do that.
Okay. Do you understand that if you're an artist, I think last week we used Michelangelo's painting the Sistine Chapel in the agony and the ecstasy. If you are an artist and you paint a picture and you put all the meaning and feeling and emotion and everything into that picture, when I see the picture, I only know the feeling, motion, meaning that is instilled in me. Does that make sense?
Oh, heck yeah.
So a painter who is trying, or even you could say a musician or a painter or any kind of artist or anything like that, who is trying to express himself through his skill, never really succeeds at that. Is that okay?
Because it's an overcoming?
No, it's because no matter what I paint, no matter what I do, you do not know my meaning, feeling, and emotion behind my painting. You only know the emotions and feelings that my painting stirs in you.
Yes, yeah.
Do you understand that, Patrick?
Oh, sure. I get that all the time with my newspaper column writing. I'm constantly amazed at what people get from my writing that I sure as hell wasn't thinking of.
Well, then let's take up the writing in the same way. How might writing be of the same ilk as painting a picture?
Well, it's certainly, if I'm wanting to convey an emotion or a feeling about something, and I use words to try to convey that, those will be my images and my images alone, that anybody else reading those words will be generating their own images. They'll have little or nothing to do with the images I thought I was creating.
How about a belief, thought, idea, concept, etc.? Where did those things go? Are you communicating beliefs, thoughts, concepts in what you are writing, yes or no?
Oh, yes.
Oh, no!
I think I am.
I said, okay. Are you? Maybe you're, no, in fact, you are not. The question is, the artist is painting a picture, and what is important is for each observer of the picture to get his own. In other words, the painter is instilling in the other person the awareness of themselves. Is that reasonable?
That is very reasonable, yes.
Then why would it be any different in languaging? Everything that you language, in a sense, is not about communicating you to another person, but for them to be aware of themselves based on the language or the picture or the image or whatever that you conveyed in your words.
That's showing something that we do hear something completely else that you try to tell us.
That's right. And so when you come back and say, I said this, did this, meant that, implied that, no, I did not in that regard. What I'm trying to do is to convey a picture to you to see if somehow or other that from that picture of words or painting or whatever it is, we can gain a mutual understanding or a communication. But in a sense, the only thing like tonight or the only thing ever in any way I am expressing my words to create a foundation for you to create the image or picture of yourself that you truly desire. I don't even expect you to understand what I am saying. Just listen to the words and paint the picture that from that you can understand yourself. What I think about discontenting, what I think about self, what I think about ego is nothing, but I bring up the subject such that then you can look at and understand yourself. What I communicate is unimportant, but what I can use as a foundation for you to communicate to yourself, that is important.
And so it's clear how important it is that you get some engagement during these calls, because it's through the engagement you get a window in on the images that we're creating on our end.
And I know not only the images, I know whether the beliefs and concepts are consistent here, but if they're not, then it's like I had somebody say the other day, oh, this personal self and eternal self, oh, hell, that's nothing. Okay, well, fine. Then we can say a great deal about that individual. Are we okay about this?
Yes, I think I am.
Yes, me too.
Then let me ask you another question. Let's see, this is elsewhere, but we'll pick it up here. In like on the Forever Living or the Eternal Self site, instead of struggling to do something, let's call it that, could you, struggling to do something, I mean, how do I do that? How do I live my eternal self? What do I do? How do I stop discontenting myself? Are those reasonable questions?
Yeah.
My question to you is, could you, let's say as a nonce time being, could you put yourself forward in time that you are an eternal being, that you have no longer, you are no longer discontenting yourself, and tell me how you did that?
Hmm.
In other words, when we start off with something, they say, well, what do I do? Because you're saying, what do I do to cause the result? I'm saying, could you move yourself into a position of saying, okay, you are now an eternal being. From Patrick, what did you do? You are no longer discontenting yourself. What did you do? If I ask Karen, well, how the hell do you carve those wonderful birds? She says, this is what I did. See how simple that is? Instead of pondering, how do I not discontent myself? Can't you go to it's done, now tell me what you did?
What a novel idea.
Why novel? It's like, as an architect, and I'm presenting the plans to the committee or to the individuals, etc. I walk them through the building. The building is done. This is the way it is. And I walk them through the building. This is, it's like a school we did. 22 classroom school. Walk them through the school, the entertainment, gymnasium, the library, walk through the cafeteria and how it is, and it's done, and here's how we did it. I don't have to struggle at the beginning. Is what am I going to do to make it? It's done, so I'm just telling them, well, this is what we do. Why can't you
make that analogy?
What?
To make that analogy a little bit more refined. When you got the specs from the school saying, okay, we want 22 rooms or whatever they asked for, how did you image that before, never mind what you presented to the client committee, where did your mind go first?
Well, the point to that was the first thing they do is it possible? Well, let me back up a minute. And since you asked me that particular question, I said to the school board, we can do this for under $2 million. This was a school a long time ago. Yeah. We could do that school for under $2 million. So that was a criteria. Secondly, can I do this in a way and a manner that I can do it differently than the way schools are always built? Because the school board says, well, you can't. No, it was $1.6 million. They said, you can't build it for $1.6 million. So go ahead and do it. So the question is, then, what did I want to do in designing the school that would be so different, that would allow me to maybe solve the problem? So I designed the school, and so it's complete. And in my mind, it's this is the picture. Then how do I go about doing that, in fact, for less than $1.6 million? But it's done. And then I go back and say to myself, it's laid out. Now, it's like saying, when you set a goal, then wear your hat. You are the goal complete. Now, what did I do? Is this making any sense?
Yeah, it is. No, that's right. You've thrown yourself forward in time, so to speak, to say, this is what I would do. You have an image of how it can be accomplished with $1.6 million, and then somebody can ask you, how did you do that?
Or even my proceeding with that or adjusting the initial design is based on there. We did it for 1,000,006. What the hell did we do to accomplish that?
Yeah, okay.
And then I take what we did and say, that's what we'll do. We okay so far?
Yep.
By the way, we got two bidders for that at $1,595. And multiplied out to the dollar and cents. Okay. So the question is, can you see a project done? Can you see a not discontenting done? And then ask yourself, how did I do that?
Yep, I think it's the same thing as that I would imagine was as you said Karen did. Karen, she sees the sculpture in the wood and then can tell you how it was done.
But taking that example, if I ask Karen now, she could tell me everything she did with each and every bird, could she not?
Yep.
All I'm saying is that eternal or personal beings living as their eternal self can do the same thing. See it done and tell me how you did it. You are struggling as a personal being to become or to do or to create and to cause, and you don't know how to cause. Then get out of trying to cause something, visualize it done, and tell me how you did it. It's much easier than you think it is.
Well, I'm going to give that a whirl.
Okay. Well, do the same thing in terms of not discontenting yourself. Don't struggle to not discontent yourself. Put yourself into not discontenting and tell me how you did it. Or tell yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you have a... This is the freedom of Nantes time that you can do, but you're living by the sequence of past, present, and future, and in that then you say, well, that doesn't do me because even the future is going to be what I am going to do. No, go to the future and say, this is what I did, and tell yourself how you did it. It's simpler than you think. Are we okay?
Yep. I'm okay.
All right. Do you understand that as a personal being, living your eternal self, you cannot speak or act wisely? Is that okay?
You better ask that again. No, you got to ask that again, please.
As a personal being living your eternal self cannot speak or act wisely. You see, you've tried to say, okay, then eternal self is greater than personal self, and that's not true. What if, as an eternal self, you cannot speak or act wisely? What if, as an eternal self, you cannot speak or act lovingly? The fact is, you can't even act compassionately.
As a personal self.
as a personal being, living as an eternal self, none of these things can occur. Is that okay?
I was beginning to really get clear that eternal being ain't the old wise one. That's for sure.
And so the eternal being in that regard, then, you can't know right or wrong. And you can't know right things to say or do in each situation. Can you understand?
Even thinking and speaking in those terms, aren't we hauling and keeping ourselves in personal being?
Well, let's put it this way. If you live in those terms, aren't you discontenting yourself?
Well, that too. Yes.
And so, if what you're doing in this regard as living, you're a personal being, living as your eternal self, then it's just normal and natural, isn't it? It's not wise or all-knowing. It's not good. It's not evil. And you won't necessarily be loving or compassionate. Why might do you suppose that be so? Well, have you ever considered that good, right, wise, compassionate, loving, caring, all of those things are tightly bound to judging?
I think that's true, yep.
So then that maybe there is a way to conduct your life that has nothing to do with judging. So loving, good, being able to do the right thing or the compassionate thing or the caring thing is all judging. Is it possible that you can be eternal by conduct without judging?
Eternal by conduct?
But eternal by conduct is the next thing. In other words, by living in a certain way, you can experience yourself as an eternal being. Is that possible? We've just said, okay, by emotions, by not discontenting yourself, you can begin to experience yourself as an eternal being, or personally living as an eternal being. I'm now saying, or asking, maybe, or is it, do you believe, possible that there are certain conducts that, or actions you can take that will enable you to see or sense or be aware of yourself as an eternal being, but none of those conducts can be based on judgment?
Well, the only thing that comes immediately to mind is living self-evidently. And I think, imagine here, also not discontenting myself. Wouldn't that, if I'm conducting myself in that manner, would that be in the right direction?
Yes, but you've got a problem in that. For instance, do you understand that at every moment supplants the preceding moment?
That's something I constantly forget. Yeah.
Something that we've said, but we don't really believe it because we think the prior moment created from the past, created the present and the future, right?
Well, they're pretty continuous anyway, yeah.
Well, maybe yes. They're not continuous.
No, I just saw your image of pulling the string tight, or the chain tight.
What do you think makes it continuous?
It seems that my reaction to one instant dictates my action in the next instant. That's what makes me think they're continuous.
Memories.
Ah.
Yes. Your memories make you believe they are continuous. But let's suppose that absent that nature of memories, because memories function in several different ways in that regard, there are some things you want to be continuous and some things you don't. So you have to then apply memories to some things and not to other things. Is that okay?
For instance, what kind of things would I want to apply it to?
How to breathe, how to have your heart pump and continue pumping, how to have your body functions work so you didn't have to start all over again every time you wanted to take a walk.
Okay. Those are definitely are those things that I want to make.
Okay, so then you want those things to the memories to keep those things operating, but you don't necessarily want you and your life to be living by memories, do you?
No.
Because your emotions and etc. Are habits of memory more than anything else.
Yes, I can buy that.
Okay. Would it not be nice to begin again in every moment then without the struggle of overcoming memories?
Yes. Without the baggage.
So, then in the same way then, eternal by conduct, one of the things you could do was, rather than struggle against those memories, see it's done and then tell me how you did it.
Ah.
Okay, but then also, then if you're starting to say, I could begin again or begin anew in every moment, what conduct do you suppose that you, or conduct process, could you follow that would allow you to begin again in every moment without being trapped in your old memories and your old stuff?
What if, in
every conversation you were to choose or say something, but before speaking, and we say conversation, what if in every action as well, before speaking or acting, you were to choose what it is you would say or do? If you wanted to live as an eternal self, could you then ask yourself, would I as an eternal self be willing to say this or do this eternally?
That implies having something specific in mind.
But you make the choice first, and then you decide whether the choice you have made is something that you as an eternal being would be willing to say or do eternally.
And we can do that in Notstein, can't we?
You can do that at any time.
But I'm just saying is that that wouldn't sound like an awkward conversation.
No.
Wow.
So you would say, yes, as an eternal being, if I would be willing to say this or do this eternally, then you could reasonably assume that you could go ahead and say that or do that. But you should also ask yourself, would I be willing to have this done or said to me eternally as well? If there is a no answer, then choose something else. Choose another way to see or do or act or be. Do you understand that?
Yes. I believe so.
Do you understand the difference between that and do unto others as you would have them do unto you? That's JC. Or Buddhism is don't do anything to anyone else that you wouldn't have them do unto you. That's Buddhism. JC stole from Buddhism, and I don't know where Buddhism got it. And I'm saying is that if you wanted to live as an eternal being by conduct, isn't it reasonable that everything you would say or do would be something that you would be willing to say and do eternally as an eternal being and have done to you eternally as an eternal being?
That sounds very reasonable, yes.
So if the answer is anywhere in there no, then don't do it. If the answer is yes to both questions, then go right ahead. Now my next question is, do you suppose that if you had chosen to choose to say or do something that you would be willing to do eternally and have done eternally to you, do you suppose that you would in that be discontenting yourself?
No, I don't suppose we would at all, no.
So, we could say then that would be a way of living by conduct that in that then you are not discontenting yourself.
Yeah, that's better than, no, don't do that.
So then, struggling not to discontent yourself, like I said before, you can't solve a problem on the level of the problem. Struggling against your discontenting yourself probably won't work.
I think the high probability of it not working.
But if you are wanting to be and live as an eternal being, then make eternal choices and you will find you're not discontenting yourself.
Yeah, makes sense completely.
Okay. Then there is a way of being and living eternally or at your eternal self by conduct, and that is to follow that little process.
Yes, absolutely.
It doesn't mean that you make a choice to discover what is it I would be willing to do eternally, because now you're into judgments again, and then that will discontent yourself. Make a choice and then decide whether you would be willing to do that eternally and have it done unto you eternally. Is that okay?
That's just fine.
Then the discontentment would not in that be there, and you would not have to live or create drama and emotions to overcome your discontent, would you?
No, I would not.
And the reason for making the choice first and then challenging even your own choice is so that you can get to the point of saying, well, wait a minute now. I'm discovering that, let's say I'm hey, 80% of the time I'm willing to do this eternally and have it done unto me eternally, then can you, what we're doing in that regard is seeing how well you choose how you will be and live your life. Is this reasonably okay?
Yeah, I would, I could, I guess the if I was incorrect in my assessment of whether or not I would actually be prepared to live that eternally, I would find out really quickly, wouldn't I?
You certainly would. Now, in that, as far as yourself is concerned, as an eternal being, is it reasonable to say that whatever you have done in the past is of no consequence under this condition? That you can begin again right now, in this moment, in this way, and whatever you've done in the past is as a memory or a remembrance of no consequence? Is that okay?
Yes, I'm writing that down.
Because then what you're doing in that regard is, in each time you ask that question, you are starting yourself anew in every moment. So you are beginning again as an eternal self or an eternal being, or recurring yourself as an eternal self or an eternal being in every moment. And while it might be cumbersome in the beginning, it doesn't take very long before you realize that the conditions or the content of what you are saying and doing in life is only those things that you would be willing to say and do eternally and have done unto you eternally.
That follows. I can see that. Yeah.
Okay. I told you a long time ago about a gal who was a teacher, and she went back to, she was here and we talked to her, and she went back to, I don't know, Minnesota and etc. She was a grade school teacher, and she got, the first day of school, got this letter from the principal saying, read this letter to your class. And it was a letter of what the principal expected in terms of conduct. There was something like 11 or 12 points, whatever it is. So she read that to her class of fifth graders, fourth graders, or something like that. The conduct that she and the school expected from those kids. And then afterwards said, now here's the way we'll live this year. Don't you do anything to somebody else that you wouldn't be willing to have done unto you. Forget all these other things. Don't hit somebody except that you'd be willing to have them hit you. Don't say anything that you wouldn't be willing to say or have said unto you. Works fine for a class. May not have to go through all the rules. So I'm trying to set up here a way of conduct in which you conduct your life as an eternal being, and in that, in conducting yourself as an eternal being, are you not an eternal being?
Yes.
Well, okay. Then what we're saying in that then, could you not present yourself as an eternal being and say to yourself, well, how did you do that? I only did those things that I would be willing to do eternally. See how simple that is?
Yes.
And then when you, that's exactly how you did it. You can't be an eternal being if you're doing things that you wouldn't be willing to do eternally, could you? Simple as that. So then go back to the beginning. Now, how do you become an eternal being? Do only those things that you would be willing to do eternally and have done unto you eternal. See how simple that works? Well, it works in almost everything that you were thinking about today. In a project, a solution to a problem, a difficulty, an illness, etc. It is done. Now tell me how you did it. When we did the 40-acre site in Hawaii, in Alaska, for Alaska 67 and 67, I designed it in my mind as a completed picture, and then went through each thing one at a time and said to myself, well, now, how did we do that? And then in that, I laid out what we would do. I could tell myself how we did that. You're so busy trying to figure out how you can cause something, whereas an eternal being, you can move out of time into a it's done, now how did you do it perspective and live that. And the beginning, begin again, nature of life doesn't say you can't be eternal being until you overcome all of your eternal past. That's karma. Mm-hmm. That's crap. You can begin again right now, living in this way by conduct as an eternal being or not.
And you say that every time you ask the question, am I willing to, say, do that forever and set down onto me forever? This is a new beginning.
That's right.
No.
And it doesn't say you have to do it the way you did before. It doesn't say you got to think up new ways to do it. It merely says, if this is what you have chosen to do, is this something you'd be willing to do eternally? And if not, then you know you are not living as an eternal being. And you also know that in not living as an eternal being, the likelihood is very good that you will discontent yourself. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because what you want most of all in life is to know and experience yourself as an eternal being. Nothing else matters more than that.
No.
Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, okay, then maybe we should stop there for now. I mean, if that's an okay, well, I guess we could.
I got no arguments with that. That makes it so clear.
Well, you know, that's what we presented back in 95. And so now I'm just going on with it again and putting it into a broader context. But let me tell you that the whole idea and concept of putting yourself in Nantes time into the future about a project or something that is done and tell yourself, gosh, how did we do that? Or how did I do that? and you will find that you can do that, and you already have a solution to your problem. When you can't, at the beginning of the situation, find a way to cause an answer, you can see it done and know how you did it. The question is then, like for you, can you visualize it done for a client and then tell your client? You may speak to the client and this is what we'll do, but you're speaking to yourself in terms of this is what I did.
Well, that's clear. Yep, I can do that.
Okay. Well, give it a try. It's what I've been doing in doing architecture and all of that all these years, is presenting to the client the house or the building or the design that is done. And then I can tell them exactly how we did that. Do the same with your life. And when you do that as an eternal being, you will find you're not discontenting yourself. Therefore, you don't have to spend so much of your energy creating drama and emotions to cover up your discontent. Okay, well, then we'll quit right there while we're ahead.